Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Showgram Podcast. Mike Siano along with Corey Stats Schwartz, your show for Thursday, April 9th, 2015, year of our Lord. Got a lot of stuff to go over today. We got some injury news. We have some bullpen closer carousels spinning like tops. But first, some housekeeping. Don't forget the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. You'll get your two-start pitchers blog post on either today or Friday. Today's Thursday, by the way, from the Goose. So keep an eye out for that. It won't be as sexy as last week's when you get Kershaw twice and Aaron Harang twice. But it'll be lovely nonetheless. And don't forget the Twitter machine, at Fantasy411 is the general account, at Schwartstops, at the Cap23, at Zach MLB, and at Fred Zinke MLB. So tons of Twitter handles for you to click follow on and soon after click on follow.
Can you handle all those handles?
Can you handle my handles? What else do I have to say? Anything else? Is that it?
This is the first podcast of the 2015 MLB regular season.
There you go. The MLB championship season.
Championship season.
As I like to call it.
Year of our commissioner 2015. Year one.
It's right. It's 1AB. It's 1AB after Bud.
Right.
So we have all that going on. And I think that's it for the housekeeping.
All right.
But we were just looking a little bit at, we have MLB Central on. Let's give a plug out to MLB Central. I really like this show in the morning. It's nice to have, you know, it's great having the hot stove show in the morning because it's you're cold, it's the winter, whatever. But this is like, you know, there's real baseball going on. You're getting highlights, you're getting interviews and stuff like that. But we were just watching the recap of the Royals-White Sox game. And one of the storylines was Kane getting hit by the shark. And then the next day having his revenge.
Yes.
But while we were watching that, we were talking about, before that was the Reds-Pirates highlights.
Yeah.
And I brought up how hot Todd Frazier is, but he's no Adrian Gonzalez. Right. And you brought up a wonderful point, and that was?
And this is the beautiful thing about it being the first week of the season. You know, Jake Lamb of the D-backs had a homer and seven RBIs in the D-backs' first two games. And now he has a homer and seven RBIs through three games, so his pace is tailing off.
He's not going to hit 210?
I doubt it. Adrian Gonzalez might hit 270 homers.
I think he's on pace for 252.
If Jake Lamb had two big games back-to-back in August and you're not in a daily league, you might not even ever notice because by the time the week ends, he might be in a 1-for-12 skid and the hot streak is over. Everything is news now because it's the first couple of days of the season and everybody's starting from zero. So when a guy jumps out fast, you notice it very quickly. You know, we have to be very careful about, you know, not getting all Emilio Bonifacio on this stuff. You know, remember the opening day he went 5-for-5 with an inside
the park
homer. The
original Roto Monster.
Right, and you know he ended up losing his job by June, and you know.
Who do we have last year? I always confuse them, and I don't confuse it anymore because Dozier went on to have a great year.
Right.
But it was like there were three guys on the Twins. It was like Parmalee, Dozier, and who was the guy that was going bananas?
Right, who had like 30 RBIs in
April. And then just gone.
But I can't even remember.
I'm saying. I'm like, yeah. I don't think it was Parmalee. I got to look it up. But it was. But to the Bonifacio point, it's like every year, to me, I always call it the Chris Shelton rule.
Right.
Remember Chris Shelton's April? He was Shane Spencer, but in April.
Yep.
One year. And everybody's like, and then. Gone.
And, you know, even, look, you know, DFS is becoming a big thing. You know,
yes,
you and
is.
I don't do
I
as much.
I enjoy it thoroughly.
You and I don't do as much DFS as maybe some others do. So this
I've
is still
playing
more
every
of
day.
Do you really?
I've been playing every day.
Daily?
Yeah.
Then we should start to get a little bit more DFS session here.
Well, this is a weekly podcast. Okay. This is WFS.
But my point is that, you know, if a guy's had a big two or three games, that matters a lot more in DFS because you might want to ride that hot streak for another day or two. Whereas in a weekly league, you're probably not even going to notice. Right. So, it's fun and it's exciting and it's great to see stats showing up, but you can't get any more excited about a guy with seven RBIs in his first two games than you can worry about a player going 1-for-12 in his first three.
Now, in fairness to Adrian Gonzalez, you can get excited about him because he's a good player.
Right.
And he's one of the best hitters in baseball. You know, he does a lot of things right, and now he has, you know, he's on a power surge. So you can't, I mean, listen, he's not going to 250 homers.
No, he's on a pace for 270. Don't sell him short.
Right? I had him at 252. Maybe that was after the second homer, not his third.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I apologize to Adrian Gonzalez.
That's why I'm the stats guy.
And his pursuit of Barry Bonds' record that he will triple.
This year.
That he will triple.
I thought you meant the career record.
No, I meant the single season. But, you know, it's funny, too. I mean, you mentioned Tyler Flowers, you know, off air, whatever. every player is going to have two good games back to back. Otherwise, they would all hit 140 with one homer. Like, they have to get him from somewhere. You know, Tony Campbell. I mean, everybody for a couple days is Tony Campbell. You know, a stat stuffer on the worst team in the NBA when he was on the, what was it, the Charlotte Hornets?
The Timberwolves.
The Timberwolves, thank you. But, yeah, I mean, so you got to take it with a grain of salt. But it's nice to see the stars come out of the gate hot. It is nice.
The thing that does it for me more than anything else is you want to have immediate validation of your big decisions.
Thank you, yes.
Right, so
well said.
Whenever you make a trade, you want to see the guy you traded for get a hit in his, a couple of hits in his first game, or hit a homer, or the pitcher pitch well and, you know, throw seven innings, or the closer get a save in a first time out. You want to get some immediate payback. They just showed an ad for Turn on AMC. We're in a fantasy league with the guy who plays George Washington.
There you go.
Ian Khan.
There you go.
That's awesome, man. My 2 degrees of separation is insane. Anyway, that's just like out of nowhere.
Yeah. I'm not putting the TV on.
Let's talk
anymore.
Deal. No, don't, I definitely should. I have the attention span of like a 3-year-old. But anyway, what was I talking about? You know, you want to get immediate validation. On draft day, when you make those big decisions, you know, Joe Sheehan spent $54 on Mike Trout in this league that we're in. Trout hits a homer on opening day.
Right.
You know Trout's going to have a good year. Mm-hmm. But that homer feels good. You're like, okay, I can exhale now. So I went heavy on guys like Cole Calhoun, A.J. Pollock, Chris Carter. Between them, they've got one hit in the first 3 days of the season. I'm not panicking. But, yeah, I'd like to see a couple of knocks here and there. The bigger concern is those guys that they win the job battle coming out of spring training. Like, okay, Jake Ahmed is going to be the shortstop. Chris Owings is going to be the second baseman, but we still got Aaron Hill there.
Right.
Your guy comes out 1-for-12, and suddenly he goes from, you know, yesterday's hero to today's zero, right? You want to get immediate validation. I think that's what's exciting about a guy like Gonzalez. He's very reliable, but he's become a little bit forgotten on draft day, you know? After 2009...
Well, he also plays first base.
2009, he had 40 home runs. Then the shoulder problem set in, and the home runs went down. By 2012, only 18 home runs. So at that point, you're kind of thinking he's a solid, unsexy first base option. But the homers started to pick up again the last 2 years. The fly ball rate picked up. The home run to fly ball rate picked up. So maybe he's getting over that shoulder problem now. And you're thinking, look, 5 homers in 3 games, does that put him on a shot where he could make a run at 40 again? That's the kind of stuff that excites you early on because you start to see immediate profit opportunity. Yeah, we've got a long, long way to go, but it's now not as hard to look at Adrian Gonzalez as, you know, an upside play, you know, a guy that I really can get excited about, as opposed to Jake Lamb, like, all right, it was 2 good games. Tyler Flowers had a 3-run homer. It is what it is. Now with a guy like Adrian Gonzalez, you start to see, could this mean something special? You know?
Now there are people.
Did that make sense?
Yes. Oh, okay. Absolutely. And listen, nothing pleased me more than seeing Justin Upton homer last night. Nothing. I was so excited because he was a guy that I've gone all in on. I have him on almost every team, and you know, I wrote about him. He was my pick to be a first round value at the end of the season in our fantasy preview magazine thingy that we put out.
The E magazine.
Thank you. So. I suspect when I brought up the Twins' names that somebody either knew it right away, who's listening now, even though we're taping it on Thursday.
Who had that guy last year?
Well, no, who just knows who it is and is saying in there to the podcast, like they're on driving in their car and talk radio is on, going, Chris Colabello.
Yeah, Chris Colabello.
I looked it up. I could see somebody saying it like, and there's no way we're going to know you knew that. So, but yes, it's Chris Colabello. Shame on me for forgetting the Italian.
But I think ultimately, you know, the reason I brought up DFS is that, you know, in a full season league, you know, whether it's daily transactions or weekly transaction, but if you're in a traditional full season roto league, you're generally looking at this as one day out of a long season. Mm-hmm. You try not to get too high nor too low. You know, Adrian Gonzalez, it could mean a little bit of bump in his power this year if the shoulder keeps getting better and better. But for most guys, you're just like, all right, you know, Chris Colabello might drive in 30 runs all season.
Right.
It just happens that he had 5 of them in the first 2 days, or Jake Lamb, or whoever it may be.
Yeah, well, you know, Colabello, just to go back in the time machine, he had 11 RBIs in the first 5 or 6 games. And then he ended up having a couple more big RBI games. He wasn't hitting homers. He was just knocking guys in left and right. He only had 3 homers. And then, I mean, he just plummeted.
Disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, just absolutely disappeared. And by August 7th, he was out. He was done for the year. So, anyway. It's that's our time machine segment.
You know, the challenge is knowing the difference between a guy having a couple of good games, you know, what's a hot start versus right. what's you know, what is signal and what is noise, as Nate Silver would say. The more track record you have to know about the player, the more I would read into it a little bit and say, all right, Adrian Gonzalez has been a big power guy. The power deteriorated a little bit, started to bounce back. Could this mean the power is going to grow again this year? That's something I get a little bit more excited about than a guy with no track record who has two big games. Well, it's two big games, but I need to know a little bit more.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to some more news and notes, get more specific about some stuff. We'll start, no specific order, and we already crossed off Adrian Gonzalez, so I will put a check next to that. Verlander and Nathan, both having a little trouble on the right side. Verlander with the right tricep and Nathan with the right flexor. The thing about Verlander is, well, the thing about both of these, and me and you talked about this over text a little bit, with the Tigers bullpen, which obviously we're going to get into. But the thing about Verlander was, you know, hey, bounce back candidate. You know, as low as his value has been on draft day since his rookie year, and you're not going to invest heavy, so don't worry too much about it. And then out of nowhere, you know, he's on the shelf. Now listen, he should be back when it's over. They were able to retro it to like March 27th or 29th, somewhere around there. So it's not the end of the world, it doesn't seem. But it doesn't help when, you know, you kind of have a, you know, back to like the Adrian Gonzalez, you have high hopes,
yeah,
and they're quickly dashed, and nothing dashes high hopes more than an injury.
Well, that's sort of the opposite of, you know, the immediate validation of the hot start,
right,
is the everything that can go wrong going wrong in, yes, the first 2 days of the season. So our good friend Nando DeFino, former co-host of the Fantasy 411 television show, Graham, in Tout Wars, he has Joe Nathan and Jeremy Mejia.
Henry!
So his two main closers are on the DL in the first 3 days of the season. He's got Brandon Belt.
Mm. We'll get to Belt.
He's got two other guys. So literally in the span of the first 3 days of the season, he's got
Who's
like
he think he
guys.
Is? John Daniels?
He's got like five guys on the DL. So
just start calling him John.
Yeah, so you look at it and say, all right, well, you know, that's not immediate gratification, but by the same token, you'd say, well, everything that can go wrong has gone wrong. It can't get worse than this, can it? I mean, I wonder who else will go on the DL today. But Verlander, you know, I understand why some people thought he could be a bounce-back candidate, but, you know, a guy on the wrong side of 30 with that much mileage on his arm, you know, with his velocity being down like it was last year, I was staying away. They think he'll only miss one start, and he'll be back a week or 11 or 12 days from now. But, you know, I try not to get too excited about pitchers with his sort of you know, risk profile coming into the season.
Joe Nathan leads to a bullpen of, you know, the three names mentioned, and like I mentioned to you over the text message was, you know, Soria, Jabba, or
Rondon.
Rondon, the big guy. I had it flipped with Soria and Rondon as far as health goes, but in the end, that the whole point was it doesn't really matter. You know, Soria, I'm sure people ran, you know, you heard the stampede to go get Soria, and that's fine. Jabba's gonna probably take over the eighth inning guy, like Tony Sipp. Mm-hmm. He's gonna be the eighth inning guy. And I wouldn't be shocked to see Nathan out for a while and Jabba eventually slide in and take this over. I don't have faith in any of them. So you know what I did? I took that quick first step to the waiver wire and then put on the brakes.
Really?
And stopped myself. And I didn't even bid.
I'll tell you what I think is going to happen.
Or make a claim,
you know,
I
Nathan,
say.
As bad as he was last year with the velocity being down, you know, it's a strained forearm. And that, you know, to me, Look, again, I'm not an injury guy. I'm not Will Carroll or Stefania Bell. Definitely not Stefania Bell. To me, the forearm is the precursor to the elbow. You know, when I hear about a guy with a strained forearm, it makes me think that it could be an elbow problem coming down the road. You know, you saw that with Homer Bailey last year. I think Matt Cain is dealing with the similar thing. Again, we'll talk Giants later. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe Nathan's going to be out for a little while. Yeah. This isn't going to be a 15 days and come right back kind of thing. Soria, I think, is good enough to keep this job and hold it. You know, we've talked about this.
He is, but that doesn't mean he will.
No, not at all. You know, first let's talk general philosophy and let's talk about Soria, okay? Number one, for a closer role to change hands, two things has to happen. Number one, the guy who has the job has to give it up.
Yep.
And number two, the guy who gets the job from him has to take it away. You need both of those things to happen. You know, the Tigers say that when Nathan comes back off the DL, he'll get the job back. But if that's 3 months from now and Soria has a 2.12 ERA and is 19 out of 20 in saves or whatever, he's not giving the job back. All right, so you've got to be a little bit concerned about that. The second thing is, can Soria keep the job, right? Came back last year, was very, very effective. Velocity was down a little bit from where he was in his heyday with the Royals, but not markedly so. Didn't walk anybody, you know, strikeout per inning. I think Soria is good enough to keep the job if Nathan is out for an extended period of time. I don't mean 3 months or 6 months,
I got you.
If Nathan's out for a month or more, I think he might come back to find himself having to pitch setup for a while, and Soria might get to keep that job for an extended period of time. So
fair.
I understand what your concerns are because he's sort of a post-TJ guy, but, you know, the second you're back from TJ, you have a little bit more confidence. I think he's, you know, performance-wise, I think you got to feel good about Soria.
I got no problem with people who picked him up. That's not what I'm saying. I just said, you know what, I'm just not in the mood.
But, Mike, I thought chasing saves is fun.
I know, right? And you think about it while you were saying all that. I was in a... All right, this is the ultimate justification of our closer theory on draft day.
Okay.
The ultimate...
Why do you gotta yell?
16-team mixed league. 16-team mixed, okay? One of the participants in the league, who also hosted, is a first cousin-in-law. So his wife is a first cousin.
Okay.
Of Jason Grilley.
Okay.
Jason Grilley did not get drafted. And she texted him after the draft and said, nobody took Jason? And we were all like, no. Because Kimbrel's on the team.
Right, right.
And like, no. And she's like, I'm texting him. You guys are jerks. And then... So all right, so that's draft day. Totally forget all about it. Sunday night rolls around, and that trade comes out of nowhere. Now I'm like, you know, cursing left and right because I have Benoit in an NL only.
Oh, that hurts.
Which I was proud to have, remember?
I think Nando has Benoit. Oh, no, who has Benoit? Maybe Scott Pianowski. Anyway.
So I have Benoit, so that kind of hurt. And then my other closer is K-Rod. Now, that's an NL only. That's not the 16-team league. And he gives up a, you know, pinch-hit homer to... what's his face?
Willeen
last night. But anyway, so Jason Grilley was available in about 95% of leagues.
Yeah.
And you never saw it coming. Like, you never saw it coming. So and I drafted Benoit. Now he's not the closer anymore. The great part about drafting Kimbrel is, you know, when he gets traded, he's the closer.
Right.
No matter where he goes.
Right.
He is the closer. And he only strikes the side out in his first, you know, appearance. It's just like, it's already a mess, but if you're a Kimbrel owner, it's not.
Right. It's because the mess is not at the top.
And don't tell me, oh, I could just go get Jason Grilley on the wire. No, you can't. There's 11 other people.
Right.
No, you can't. It's not a free market.
I got Grilley in two leagues. So in the 4-1 league, which is a daily league on ESPN, I had Benoit. I drafted a ton of closers. I had Benoit. I saw the trade on Twitter, and I went on the ESPN mobile app and was able to get Grilley and drop Benoit. So to me, that's a lateral move. Is Grilley good? As good? Whatever. Right. I lost a closer. I gained a closer. I did okay there. I just beat everybody to the punch. Tout Wars. I like to get two really solid closers and a third closer who can give me 20. I want three closers. I drafted Melanson and Kenley Jansen. I don't have any problem waiting for Kenley Jansen to come back.
I did the same thing.
But I screwed up and didn't take Peralta.
Right.
Now, fortunately, I got Edward Mujica, so who's going to fill in for Uehara. But only till Uehara gets back, which may be next week.
Right.
And my third is LaTroy Hawkins, who I think will be fine, but clearly about as...
Got you know, your W yesterday.
got my bench a W.
Oh.
Long story. Anyway. But wait, it's our podcast. I can tell any story I want. Anyhow, Tout Wars has Vickery bidding, which means whoever wins the bid gets the player for the runner-up bid plus a dollar.
Right.
I've made it known plenty of times I don't like Vickery bidding. But these are the rules. You play by the rules put in front of you. And the thing I don't like about Vickery bidding is that it rewards irrational behavior.
Right.
If you want the player, you bid $100 or whatever is your max. And if there's everybody else acting rationally, you always get the player and you get the money back for the overbid. So let's say, for argument's sake, I want Cody Ash. I bid $100 on Cody Ash. He's going to go for $2. So I get him for $2 and I get all my money back and I guarantee I get the player I want. So I had a lot of guys I needed to put on the DL. I couldn't bid 100 for Grilley, which I probably would have, to be honest with you. I had $84. Again, long story. I said, I'm going to bid 50% of the nut on Grilley. I bid 42, thinking that was an irrational bid. Scott Pianowski bid 40. So I got him for 41.
Which, but that's that is where it's the great equalizer. Now, right. That doesn't happen as often as your $2 scenario.
Yeah.
But when it does happen, it hurts.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I thought I was like just picking a number and throwing it out.
I never totally agree with you, your whole irrational thing, because of exhibit Jason Grilley.
Well, but that's the thing. I'm not saying Scott bid irrationally, but Scott bid very aggressively. If two guys do that, one of the guys is going
to
get hurt. But here's the other.
To the tangle.
But here's the other side of that coin. I still got the player.
That's
true. You see?
That's true.
So that way you never lose.
Right. But you also got the player who didn't get drafted in the 16-team mix.
Yeah, well, I turn around. Yeah, but I turn around. I sold.
I love Grilley. I love him to death. But I just, it's like.
I sold Mujica for $6, so that made back a little bit of the money to Al Melchior from CBS, who has Uehara, so now he's hedged. And I'm shopping around Hawkins, but I'm not in a hurry to deal him. Hopefully he'll be competent. And then when Kenley gets back, I'll have Melanson, Jansen, and Grilley, which is a three I'm happy with. Yep. And I'll sell the Troy Hawkins for something. So, but there were plenty of times last year in Tout Wars where I bid $90, $95, whatever. The thinking being, if I get this player for $10, $20, $30, I kind of don't care. I just want to make sure I get him. You know, if there were two guys in the league like me who said, forget it, I'll bid $100, neither of us would ever do it again.
Right, exactly.
That's my point.
But it only takes once. And that's my point. It only takes once, you know?
But, you know, it's just like playing Johnny Dangerously. It's just like playing poker, right? If you go all in on every pot, you're probably going to scare off most of the people most of the time. All you need is one other guy to go all in and call you, and then you get burned on that and you learn to not do it again. But that's my point, Mike. Until I go out of the frying pan into the fire on that, I'm going to keep doing it.
No, I got you.
I'm not like throwing down the gauntlet to the other guys in Tout Wars. I think they're bidding rationally and that should be rewarded. Mm-hmm. But that's my point, that because Vickery allows you to get away with irrational bidding, that to me is the big flaw in it that I don't like.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. And, you know, I play Tout, obviously, and I in my NO only, it is hard bidding. And $100 budget. It is hard bidding. So you bid $6 on a $1 guy because you want to guarantee you got him. It's only $6, but it's still $6. I mean, when it was Vickery, I would get those guys 6 or 7 out of 10 times for $2.
Right.
But you have to out overbid by $5 because it is hard bidding.
Right.
You know?
But that's why I like
to guarantee you get a guy.
That's why I like hard bidding, because it makes you make a rational decision about how much you want this guy. And if you decide, let's say for
rational decision, but not for rational dollars.
No, yes for rational dollars, because if
you say a $1 guy is not worth $6,
then bid $1.
But you got to guarantee. But if you're desperate, you got to guarantee it. Don't forget, it's a non-mix.
But that's a rational decision.
Okay.
I need to make sure I get this player.
You're right.
Therefore, I'm willing to bid more. So let's say in NFBC, which has hard bidding, you have 1,000 rather than 100.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Grilley probably went for $400 or $500. That's a point where you have to make the decision about how bad do I really need and want this player, and how much am I willing to bet to make sure I get him. And if you bet 400, and the next runner-up bid was 100. Well, you could say you got burned by $300, but in reality, you did what you needed to do to get that player, and that was a rational decision. My approach in Vickery is, I want the player, I'm just going to bid it all, and I'll take back whatever I get back, and I get the player.
Yeah, and it's a really unique situation, too, because, number one, it's the day before the season starts. So it's hours before your first bidding of the season, right? That's number one. Number two, this wasn't one of those situations where, holy crap, the Braves played on the Sunday night game and Kimbrel blew out his arm coming in the ninth.
Yeah.
Kimbrel's fine.
Yeah.
The only people that really got screwed on this were Benoit owners. That's it, you know? So it was a really unique situation. But here you are going into your first bidding window in Fab of the season, and you're spending 50% of your budget, potentially, your Fab budget, on a guy that didn't get drafted.
But I'll tell you what, though.
I mean, think about that.
But look, that being said, I mean, you know, once the draft is over, and this is funny, I was talking trade with somebody, I don't want to call anybody out. But
in a volatile position, the most volatile.
Right, the most volatile. But the position where a single move can have the biggest impact because it's a finite universe
of players.
Well, that's
why the money gets spent.
I was talking trade with somebody in an auction league, and we were going back and forth on the players, and he said, well, you know, I paid $12 for this guy, and you're offering me a guy who only paid $6 and a waiver wire pickup or a reserve pick.
Right.
And I'm like, the draft's over. You know, like, you know, this is, you know, it's not a keeper league.
Whatever. You know, I mean, you can't, I know, but you can't. But yes right, and no.
But I'm going to take this in a separate direction in a second, so go with me on this one.
All right, fine.
Draft dollars only matter during the draft. You know, it's a proxy for what the player's value was in that draft, but in that moment, too. It's not a hard and fixed, you know, assignment of what the player is worth. It's not, you know, a contract in Major League Baseball where we're paying this guy $20 million and he's always worth 20, you know, he's always going to count $20 million. The draft's over.
Yeah.
So what I say to the guy is, once the season starts, everything is up for grabs. And we ended up making the trade and it worked out fine, but
I'll poke a hole in your theory though after you're done. Just get,
it's going to be a
just
while.
Just hurry up and get done.
If you
want
to wait till I'm done, it's going to be get comfortable, my man. You know, enjoy the big jug of knowledge over there. But my point is that, hold on, I'm going to get to a point in a second when I organize my thoughts again, is that, you know, a draft, an auction bid reflects what the player's worth in that moment. Once the season starts, all bets are off and all circumstances change. And whether or not the guy was drafted doesn't matter because the circumstances have changed since the draft. If we had perfect information on draft day and we knew what A.J. Preller was up to, we would have all drafted Jason Grilley. But like you said yourself, we know Craig Kimbrell's the closer. Why are we drafting Jason Grilley? You know, there are lots of good relievers that didn't get drafted. There's nothing unique about Jason Grilley in that regard. We draft Jason Grilley because of the role. Let's face it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So once
let's see, once
the role changes, that makes the guy valuable.
Right.
You know, let's say Sean Doolittle was healthy or Jake McGee was healthy or Kenley Jansen was healthy. Would we really have cared who the setup guy was in those bullpens? Maybe Boxberger, maybe Clippard, but you're talking about a buck.
Right.
We wouldn't have drafted anybody out of the Dodgers bullpen.
No.
The reason you drafted Jason Grilley is because he got made the closer. Okay, so that's one thing. This is a second thought. I've got two more to get to.
All right, hurry.
Are you comfortable?
I'm comfortable.
The second thought is, when it comes to Fab, to me it's not spending early, spending late, whatever. It's spend on the guy who can make the difference and get that guy. Last year, remember K-Rod was named the Brewers closer like on opening day?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody assumed it was Henderson. And they said, well, we don't like the way he threw the ball during the spring. K-Rod's going to be the closer. And once Henderson gets it back together, Henderson will be the closer. I bid very heavy on K-Rod based on the principle that we talked about before. Number one, I think K-Rod's good enough to hold the job. Number two, I don't think Henderson's good enough to take it away from him.
Right.
And I got a full season of saves out of K-Rod.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't great, but I got a full season closer for Fab money.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's the same thing with Grilley. I spent 50% of my Fab dollars before the season even started on the bet that he's good enough to hold the job and Jim Johnson's not good enough to take it away from him. So I got a full season closer, you know. Yeah, you can say I spent 50% of my Fab, but I got a full season closer that could cost 14, 16, 20 bucks on draft.
Yeah, good point. All right, let's.
I have one more point, but I'm going to save it for later.
Okay, let's
you talk for a while now.
Let's do lightning round on the news and notes so that we can get to the Twitter questions because we are running out of time a little bit.
All right.
So Mets bullpen, we all know what happened with Mejia. We saw Blevins. We saw Buddy Carlyle.
That was awesome.
My friend's nickname is Buddy. I said, hey, Buddy. Buddy got you a save. But I think Familia is going to get involved here. Terry Collins basically anointed him already. He gave him, you know, the kiss of death. So very interesting situation to keep an eye on there. And don't forget they have Bobby Parnell coming back eventually.
Right. I'll tell you what, though. Again, Familia, relative to the other guys he's competing with, Familia is every bit as good as those guys.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Strikeout an inning last year.
No doubt about it.
Doesn't give up home runs. His problem is the walk. If he can contain the walks, you could see him keep that job for a while. I think Soria has a better chance to seize it and run with it.
Absolutely.
But I think it wouldn't shock me if Familia ended up, leading the Mets in saves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say holding the job all year long, but leading the Mets in saves. He must be picked up 100% of leagues.
Yeah, so I got him in that 16-team mix that Jason Grilley didn't get drafted, and I was able to get Familia off the wire. Yankees bullpen, very interesting last night. You know, everybody was saying Betances has to regress. You just can't be that good all the time. Now, the question now becomes, does he regress to mediocrity or does he regress to above average? Because he was way above average last year. So, you know, he had a little bit of a rough go there. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. And then Andrew Miller came in and was fantastic.
Yeah.
Second career save. That's so funny.
That's crazy.
You know, I mean, it was a second career save for Andrew Miller. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know how Girardi's going to play this. The weather's terrible up in the Northeast. You don't know what's going to happen here. But I'll tell you what, if I'm a Betances owner, I'm not upset just yet. If I'm a Miller owner, I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, well, you know, again, Scott Pianowski pointed this out, that Miller went much cheaper than Betances in almost every single draft, despite the fact that, A, Betances had a terrible spring, and his velocity was way down, and B, Girardi, and still hasn't, anointed one guy as the closer. He said, we're going to go on matchups. Now, you look at what happened last night. Girardi did what he said he was going to do. Betances faced the righties, and then Miller got the people due up in the ninth were lefties and switch hitters. So it wouldn't shock me, you know, if it were 3-4-5 due up, if it were Bautista, Encarnacion, Donaldson due up in the ninth inning, it wouldn't have shocked me if Girardi had geared it to have Betances face those guys, righty on righty. But he did what he said he was going to do. The interesting takeaway to me, as Scott Pianowski from Yahoo pointed out, is that Miller went for so much cheaper than Betances. Did we all collectively miss every shining red signal?
It's almost as if it's almost as if people don't realize Miller strikes a lot of guys out. He just doesn't strike out 120.
Right.
But it was weird. So I'm with you. And Miller, yes, Miller was going way after Betances in most leagues or cheaper, but it was just a weird dynamic. I don't know why. By the way, Osuna on the Jays. Did you see that kid pitch
last night?
Roberto
Osuna? I didn't see him.
Oh, my God. He is filthy.
Oh, yeah?
Filthy. 95 with an 80-mile-an-hour changeup. It was ridiculous.
That's a big
and
gap.
And he's a really young kid that they allowed to make the team.
They have, what, five rookies? Something like that?
Yeah, they got Travis at second.
They got two rookies in the rotation, Sanchez and Norris.
Yep.
They got Devin Travis at second base, Dalton Pompey in center.
Yep.
They have Castro, and who's the other guy in the bullpen?
Osuna. That's the other guy.
Right, that's six.
Yeah.
That's six.
Yeah. This kid's filthy. Keep an eye on him. Speaking of Betances,
is Kevin Pillar still officially a rookie?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think
That's at least six. That's at least 25% of your roster.
If you go back and look at the box score from the Marlins game when Latos pitched, you'll throw up. Latos was absolutely awful. Steve Cishek was pretty awful too.
Amazingly, was worse.
Yeah, 104 ERA.
108. Latos got away with a 94.5.
Yeah. You mentioned this in the early going, and this is absolutely true, and this is kind of why I like it and why I don't, you know, not why I don't, but the risk involved. I had Latos in daily. I mean, it was over.
Yeah.
It was over. Right. My day was over when he got pulled out of that game.
Yeah.
You have no shot. So he was minus 17 points.
Oof.
Minus 17 points
that's
in a
not
daily.
Good, right?
That's not good.
Here's the funny thing. We do, the Bill James pitcher score, for the starting pitcher.
Yeah.
We put those in the box scores this year, finally, 30 years late. Anyway, so Kyle Loesch on opening day, I think, had like an 8 or a 10 or something like that. And Latos had like a 6.
Wow.
So Adam McAlvey, who's our Brewers reporter, fantastic writer, emailed me, was like, Kyle Loesch, 8's not good, right? Or whatever the number was. I was like, no, that's definitely not good. He was like, okay, just checking.
Yeah.
And then Latos had 6.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if Adam saw this. So.
I mean, I'm not worried about him, but I had him as a big sleeper. I didn't even think he was going to make the first start for them. I thought they might leave him down. He is down already. But, maybe do some minor league rehab, like some Garrett Richards type stuff. Just to get the little rust off, but they just,
His velocity was way down last year. His pitches were not the same.
Yeah.
He got away with it because he was very fortunate on the home run to fly ball rate and the strand rate, but I had Latos in a couple of leagues last year, and he did not pitch well.
Yeah.
He didn't have the ability to put guys away. So, look, he's not going to have a 94.5 ERA all year. I'm reasonably confident in that.
That would be a record.
Unless he misses the rest of the season.
Right.
But I wouldn't look for this to be, hey, it's one disaster start and he'll go back to being the same guy he used to be. I don't know that that's going to happen. Okay. I mean, to me, this is an end of rotation guy.
Mm-hmm.
Until he proves the velocity and the movement and the bite on the pitches is back, I'm not enthusiastic about his season.
Okay. All right, we'll keep an eye on that. Kimball trade, I think we covered that just fine.
pretty good. It's good news for Cameron Maben. So I'd
say that. Yeah, good point. Very good point. And then as far as the Giants go, Belt, Peavy, Kane. Belt with the groin, they did not put him on the DL, so that's potential good news. Peavy with the back, same as Belt, did not put him on the DL, potential good news, depending on how much you value Peavy. Belt, to me, is, obviously a very valuable player. And then Kane just looks like some pretty bad news, but we touched on that in the beginning. So
just
who comes out.
Quick note
good?
On that. Belt has said he wanted to take batting practice. He could be in the lineup in a day or two, it would appear. So keep an eye on that one. PV, they think, will miss one start. Chris Heston made the spot start last night. Matt Cain, flexor tendon, like we talked about with Nathan, that's the kind of thing that can linger a little bit. I would be picking up Yusmeiro Petit in NL and deep leagues right now because I think he's going to end up in that rotation.
Yeah. And he's shown some flashes.
You know, he's one of those guys, like you said about Grilly, for that matter. Nobody ever drafts Yusmeiro Petit.
Right.
And then at the end of the year, his numbers are pretty good.
You know, now, what about Loebstein with the Tigers, who's getting Verlander's spot and will start this weekend?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Ditch.
AL only?
Ditch.
very nice. Ryan Braun pinch hit last night, by the way. So
he's fine.
He's probably going to be
okay. He hit one 75 feet, but it was still an RBI single.
There you go.
Line drive in the scorebook.
All right, let's get through these Twitter questions. Let's see, 3, 6, 9, 10 of them. Let's get through
speed
all
round.
Of them. Speed round. Speed round. This is from Sad History Major.
Aw.
Please rank Jed Jerko, Joe Panic, Devin Travis, or Marcus Semien. Semien's been pretty interesting so far.
Yeah, ups and downs on all these guys, you know, things to like, warts and all, but I would say Semien, Jorko, Travis, Panic in that order.
I think I agree.
But they're close.
Yeah, they are close, but I like your ordering of that, sir.
Thank you.
At @u_neek81, unique, get
81.
It? Angel Pagan or Austin Jackson, rest of season, which is, by the way, another 159 games in a 12-team mix, head-to-head points.
Okay, I'm going to hedge on this answer. If I wanted to, if you're asking me who will have the most points at the end of the season, it will be Austin Jackson. If you're asking me who will put up more points when they play,
right,
it will be Angel Pagan.
I totally understand what you mean.
There's no reason whatsoever to think Angel Pagan will be healthy all year long, but when he plays, he's a better player than Austin Jackson.
Yep. No, absolutely.
In my opinion.
Okay.
In fantasy.
I agree. I'm a big Angel Pagan fan. I think Austin Jackson goes through too many periods of just disappearing.
Yeah.
And that kills you in a head-to-head.
Yep.
You know? Whereas Angel Pagan, like you said, if he stays healthy and when he does play, he's always going to contribute, and every once in a while, he'll put one out, he'll steal some bases,
look,
you know?
He's batting third.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with Pence out and now with Belt out for a little while, Pagan batting third, it's a nice bump in value.
10-team mix. Pagan did not get traded. I picked him up right after the draft.
Yeah, he hardly got drafted.
This is from @Birdly23. Who should I add, Jake Lamb or Avisail Garcia?
You know, again, we joked about Lamb's homer and 7 RBIs. You know, this is a guy who put up good numbers in the minor leagues, hit for a high average, a little bit of pop. But I like Avisail Garcia. I like his overall offensive profile. I like that lineup. I like the ballpark. I'm not sold the Diamondbacks are going to be able to consistently score runs this year, and that's going to drag Lamb down. He might get platooned a little bit if he struggles with lefties. I would definitely go with Garcia.
Yeah, I agree. At @Major1527, I trade Stanton, Carlos Santana, and Kenley Jansen for Pujols, Rios, and Beltre. Yes or no?
All right, let's do a little bit of knockout thing here and answer the question in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Would you trade Stanton straight up for Pujols?
No.
Would you trade Carlos Santana straight up for Beltre?
Probably not. Yeah, okay.
Right?
It's close.
Okay.
I think it's close enough.
Would you trade Kenley Jansen for Rios?
Absolutely not.
No deal.
Yeah, no deal. Either way, no matter what I feel on the fence about Santana versus Beltre, and it's probably a little irrational, the other two are just no-brainers. I'm sorry. I do not make this trade. And just to oversimplify it, you're losing the best player in the deal.
You're giving up the best player in Stanton, and you're also taking on, no offense, the least valuable player in the deal in Rios.
Yeah, I would not make this trade.
So I understand this is, you know, this is trade Kenley Jansen for something that'll help you now, but I'm not doing that.
No. And you can pick up an Alex Rios on the wire and keep Kenley Jansen. Avisail Garcia, there you go. This is from at Douglas Blad. Drop Paxton for Jesse Hahn.
Yes, I would.
Okay.
I think they're both going to end up being similar, but I'd take a shot on Hahn.
Okay, pitcher ditch, basically. At @FrankP03, I was offered Arrieta and Tanaka for sale. I'm not crazy for declining that, am I?
No, you're not crazy. I would probably do it. I'll be honest with you. You know, as valuable as Chris Sale is, clearly a top five starting pitcher, I'm a total believer on Jake Arrieta. 7 shutout innings, mm-hmm. only 3 hits last night,
pitch
Wednesday
great.
Night.
Don't chase wins.
He's really good. And, you know, I know a lot of people are down on Tanaka because of the velocity being down and him struggling against Toronto, but I think we've talked about this. I think there's a buying opportunity when guys are a little bit banged up.
Would you list this as high risk, high reward?
Yeah. Let me tell you something. I wrote this in my Tout Wars draft recap after I drafted Tanaka for $10. Among major league pitchers last season who threw as many innings as he did,
mm-hmm.
there were only 4 pitchers who had a better ERA, a better whip, and a better strikeout per 9. Kershaw and Sale were 2 of them.
I've heard of them.
Felix was 1, and Jake Arrieta was the other.
Wow.
So basically,
I wouldn't have guessed that on Arrieta.
On a per inning basis, minimum number of innings, these were 3 of the top 6 pitchers in baseball last year.
Yeah.
So it's you're getting two for one.
You're not crazy for declining it. And if you know, and if we just talked you back into it, Frank, then just reoffer it and say, hey, you had an epiphany, courtesy of Schwartz and Siena. But also, don't forget, if Frank drafted heavy if it's a daily league, he could just, you know, slide his pitchers up and down. So yep. Never mind. I don't know. I think you go back and see if you can get it again.
It's high risk, high reward. Yeah. I can see arguments both ways, but yep. I would do it.
Okay. But if he didn't, it's not the end of the
world. Okay.
He still gets to have Chris Sale, by the way. At Big Time NW, which side of this trade do you prefer, Altuve or Betts Hamels?
I take Betts and Hamels.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and again, I'm assuming that Betts is second base eligible, as he is in some leagues. That's why you would sort of have Altuve and Betts side to side.
Right.
Basically, you're getting Cole Hamels in exchange for risking that downgrade from Altuve to Betts. I'm doing that for two reasons.
I love this deal.
Three reasons, actually. Number one, I love Cole Hamels. Mm-hmm. I think he's undervalued. I think he's maybe not an ace, but he's a soft ace. Mm-hmm. Only the wins and the bad team hold him back. Number two,
He's no Aaron Harang, by the way.
Not quite. Hamels gave up four homers. Harang threw a shutout. I think Altuve will regress from last year. I don't think that's a big leap to say that. I think he's a 300 hitter who will steal a lot of bags and have good numbers, but I don't see him as a first-round caliber player. Mookie Betts, I am all in on this year. I think he's going to hit double-digit homers. I think he's going to steal 25-plus bags. I think he's going to score a boatload of runs batting at the top of the Red Sox lineup. I am all in on Mookie Betts. So in exchange for taking the risk of downgrading from Hamels to Betts, Altuve to Betts, I get Cole Hamels. Deal.
You have me at Betts plus Hamels.
Dealio.
At Miami, Furman.
Miami
Furman.
FYR man.
Yeah.
Okay. Miami Fireman.
There you go. At Miami Fireman. All right, great. Trade Beltre Lester for DeGrom Donaldson.
I think it's fair value. There's stuff to like on both sides. I don't have a problem with that.
I mean, this is a definition of a challenge trade.
Challenge trade.
Challenge! But which side do you prefer? A or B? A being Lester and Beltre. I think I prefer B. And it could just be man crush.
Donaldson, DeGrom?
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah. But there's no wrong answer. I mean, it's a challenge trade.
Yeah.
This could be an absolute wash.
To me, it's that I invested heavily in Donaldson in a couple leagues this year. Mm-hmm. I believe in that lineup. You know, I'm concerned about Beltre age and eventually mm-hmm. regressing. The Rangers lineup, I'm not sold on. Lester, DeGrom, you know, one's a veteran, one's younger. It's a fair value trade.
Yeah, and it's almost why make it, unless you're a Met fan or a Jays fan or whatever. Right. I mean, it's almost pointless to make.
Yep.
At Steve Glauber, Lowry, Headley, Tex, and Moustakas. Pick two to be mainstays in my lineup.
You know, these aren't exactly the kind of players you consider mainstays.
No. Lowry and Moustakas are waiver wire in a 10-team mixed.
Yeah.
Tex, I could see. You know, obviously, he did get drafted. I could see him being in your lineup all year unless he just completely plummets. Headley, I like Headley a lot. I mean, love that he switch hits. I mean, well, Headley and Teixeira both switch hit.
I agree with you on Headley, so let's say he's a definite. I would take Lowry as the other guy. Even though he's listed four guys here, he's probably considering Lowry a corner, which is why he's got him lumped in with these other threes.
Yeah.
He's eligible at second base.
Second base, yeah. I know.
And that gives him the edge to me, so I would go with Lowry and Headley.
I came in on high on Lowry, and I'm letting the sample size get to me. But he's looked awful.
Yeah, but you know what? You're thinking about Tuesday night, and again, we're taping this on Thursday. Tuesday night, he struck out four times on 12 pitches. Right. I don't know if that's ever happened.
I don't either.
Last night, he had three hits and a double.
True.
So
that's
you know,
right after I benched him.
Right, smart, Mike.
You know, there you go.
DFS.
All right. Well, I had him on DFS, the four strikeout. I had Lowry and Latos on the DFS team. I mean, it's just like brutal.
Did I win?
What do I get for coming in dead last?
In the country.
In the internet. Not the country, the internet. All right, last one. Michael 023433.
023433.
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. No, that doesn't work out. Miguel Montero or Derek Norris rest of season?
Which I like Derek Norris.
Season.
Especially
I'm a big Derek Norris
fan. If Derek Norris sticks in that two spot for the Padres, OBP guy hitting in front of Upton and Kemp, I like Derek Norris there. There's a lot to like about both guys, but that lineup spot really appeals to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Montero's funny because, you know, every time if John Lester makes 35 starts, that's 35 games. Montero will not be playing.
They're carrying three catchers right now.
I mean, because Lester gets a personal catcher. It's crazy.
You've got to assume that at a certain point they're going to make a deal and get to, you know, they're going to deal Wellington Castillo and get down to two.
Yep.
But, you know, I like Montero, but I like Norris. Norris has no threats to his playing time. They might burn him out by the All-Star break.
Because he's a tough guy.
He's got no one else.
Got a big beard, a lot of hair.
You know why he grows the beard? Vince Scully told me this.
Well, go ahead.
Derek Norris grows that beard because he says he's got a baby face, and when he's clean shaven, he looks like he's 12 years old.
Okay, good stuff. That was an awful impersonation.
No one can imitate Vince Scully.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411. Thanks to Corey Schwartz, the Goose, for getting all the Twitter machine questions. Keep an eye out on the Fantasy homepage for Fred Zinke's stuff. It's great stuff. We'll have Fred on the show before you know it. As always, thanks to everybody on the side of the glass. Go to the Twitter, at Fantasy411. Go to the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. Go to church. Eat your vitamins. Say your prayers.
Listen to your mom and dad.
That'll do it for this edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411.